not going to have any applause, no outbursts of anything, or you'll be asked to leave the room. Everybody understands that? They're being courteous. Everybody else be courteous. Continue.
Thank you. So certainly a buffer, and Mr. Burton suggested that no one's against buffers. I'm not against buffers, and I'm not against trees. I think trees are wonderful. If we want to have a tree planting ordinance in the county, I would support it. But what is the purpose of this buffer? The purpose of the buffer is to prevent you seeing from one subdivision to another the other subdivision. So now we're talking about a 40-foot buffer on each side of the subdivision line. So in reality, what we're talking about is an 80-foot buffer between two subdivisions. I see no evidence that an 80-foot buffer is any better than a 40-foot buffer when you have buffers between subdivisions. Many property lines in Sussex County are also the center line of ditches. Many of them are tax ditches. As you are probably aware, we're required to maintain unplanted areas alongside many of these tax ditches for tax ditch maintenance, sometimes as wide as 40 feet or greater. My question is, what happens when you butt up against a tax ditch? Obviously, you can't plant it. You can't plant the trees. So if you have a 40-foot tax ditch maintenance buffer, are you then going to require an additional 40 feet of planted area on the other side of the tax ditch? I don't see that addressed in the ordinance. Finally, if it is a benefit to have a buffer, a visual buffer, in my opinion, a 20-foot buffer is more than adequate. A 40-foot buffer is much more than adequate. If you're going to take or choose to require buffers from individual property owners for the benefit of all, I think you should compensate that property owner for providing that benefit. Thank you.
Before you walk away, if I may ask a question. You've been in business, you mentioned, for 30 years.
Yes.
How many homes have you built, if I may ask?
I would say somewhere around 500 to 1,000.
And some people here may be living in one of your homes, perhaps.
Very well, maybe. Yes.
From your perspective as a developer, I mean, have you ever built a subdivision that has gone beyond the required 20-foot buffer because the consumers desire?
Let me say this about subdivision design. A lot of times, the desire for a buffer, whether it's 20 feet or 10 feet or 40 feet, is to screen the rear yards of subdivisions from the road. And I think that's desirable. And I really have no objection to the 20-foot buffer in cases like that, where you are backing up to a road. What that says is, having said that, good subdivision design does not back houses up to roads. You try to adjust your design so that you don't have houses backing up to streets. You don't want to have to do that. So a buffer, in this case, is kind of a Band-Aid. You put a Band-Aid on a bad subdivision design. A 20-foot Band-Aid is more than adequate, in my opinion.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Mr. Willen? Mr. Willen?
After this, we'll go back to the list that's at the podium. I would ask folks to pay attention so that you, if you're up next, you're in the queue. Thanks.
My name is R.C. Willen. I reside at 4284 Woodland Church Road, Seaford, Delaware. Mr. President, members of the council, staff, I appreciate this opportunity to address you regarding this particular ordinance. I concur with many of the comments that have just been made by various people as to the benefits of buffers. Participate in buffers in my own personal life as a farmer and manage a number of buffers, many acres of buffers, under CSP programs through NRCS. But as a landowner and a farmer, person who provides services to local subdivisions, and as a member and officer of Tax Ditches within Delaware and Maryland, and also as an individual who has served on the Sussex County Land Trust, and as I said before, has maintained buffers for CSP, for conservation initiatives. I'm concerned about the implications of expanding this buffer to 40 feet. I believe it's a well-meaning, intentioned ordinance that has a genuine desire to enhance the quality of life within the county and also to preserve the viewscapes of Sussex County. And no question about that. But in considering that, I would encourage the council to consider the following comments. We need to differentiate between what a 20-foot buffer and a 40-foot buffer will mean, and ultimately we're looking at an 80-foot buffer, as was referenced by the previous speaker, what the implications of that will be long-term, not just in the initial installation, but what the long-term implications are. I've been involved in maintaining buffers for over 40 years, and so know a little bit about what's involved in doing that and the cost of doing that, and the burden that is involved in doing that. When you have a 20-foot buffer, these are mostly recently planted buffers in many cases because you aren't using an existing woods line to utilize that as the buffer area. Not all cases, but in many cases they are recently planted. They're typically low canopy. They're easily managed, and they are easily maintained in the sense that you have easy access to them with just small equipment. When you increase that buffer size, you will have increased growth of wild cherry, you'll have gum trees, and other trees that are not necessarily as desirable within that buffer that will need to be maintained. That's just the natural progression of forest lands. Even in areas that are completely clear, you will have those challenges, in even open fields. Maintaining that competition with a lower level canopy is challenging because ultimately you will have species that will arise that will extend above the lower canopy. In doing that, their desire for sunlight will push the canopy to a much larger width and design than originally the design was set forth in the plan. This causes challenges and is already causing challenges within the county in subdivisions that are now maturing. There is a evolution in the management of a subdivision as it relates to the open space areas. And this is reflected in the fact that these trees change by species and they also change in size. They're not the same size as when we plant them. They present significant implications as it relates to the management, the kind of equipment required to maintain those, the accessibility of that particular buffer area, and the cost to maintain it. Again, as I reiterate these to you, I am not against buffers, but I think it's important to understand what the implications will be, not only to this generation, but perhaps to someone who may sit in your seat in 10 to 15 years. The larger canopy, by extension, will impact the residential areas and the businesses that are going to be affected by these buffers. The management will ultimately involve social issues that will have to be dealt with by the HOA and ultimately the county staff and perhaps ultimately those of you that sit here on the council. There are challenges already as it relates to deer control, skunks, raccoons, and foxes. They were previously identified as beneficial aspects of buffer, and I don't disagree with that when they are in their natural environment and when they're controlled. There is no known predator for foxes in the state of Delaware, and we've suffered the loss of the quail population in part to the fact that when you do not have a hierarchy of predatory animals within that area, you begin to accumulate a population that can be harmful to the area and harmful to the other biology within that particular either watershed or even in that subdivision. Today, some communities are being forced to bring in outside help to control the deer populations. So I just think we need to be aware of that. When you have ice storms, when you have wind or lightning, it will take its toll ultimately on that buffer. That's just a natural occurrence. But how do we manage that when that buffer is a larger buffer containing larger trees that have reached a large canopy size? I'd like to share with you an incident that involved, and I'm not going to give the names of these subdivisions, but involved a couple subdivisions that I have been observing and been a part of advising in the past. Airy Acres, that's a pseudonym, and Robin Hood Estates. Airy Acres reached a critical point in the evolution of that subdivision in which they realized that their infrastructure and also their buffers that existed then, the natural areas, were not being maintained adequately. They had not foreseen, they didn't have the expectations of what was going to be involved in maintaining those areas long term. They made the critical decisions to do the right thing to address that. In that transition, the makeup of that subdivision changed dramatically because of the cost structure that was going to be involved there. Fortunately, that subdivision made those aggressive changes and has come out on the other side and has done well. The other subdivision, Robin Hood Estates, was reluctant to control the subdivision as it relates to the natural areas. 5 to 10 years in, they did not make the right decisions. They were limited in resources, and during that evolution, the demographics changed within that subdivision. Those that moved into that subdivision were not paying the same price for those properties. Actually, the property values declined in that subdivision because of a lack of management. That just further compounds the challenge of maintaining that open space area, and especially as it relates to buffers, because they're difficult oftentimes to reach. Recently, in a conversation with a local utility company here in Delaware, the following story was related to me. There was a power outage. This was a power outage that resulted in trees alongside the roadway impacting the power line and causing a loss of power and down lines. When the crew arrived at the location, the foreman on the job secured the incident and began the reconstruction. They were met by a homeowner whose trees were being impacted, who had impacted the original outage. He forbid those workers from doing anything else. They could do no cutting, no removal of brush, and they were informed that the power would not be able to be restored until the brush was cleared so the men could operate safely and the trees would have to be trimmed back to facilitate the reconstruction and also to ensure the fact that that outage would not occur the same day again. The property owner was recalcitrant and refused to allow them to continue. But the practice of that particular utility is to back off from that situation, so they began to pack up their tools and they began to leave. The idea being, ultimately, someone will make a decision that they want their power back again. I don't know if that's an official practice, but that's what occurred in that particular situation. A neighbor, seeing the crew beginning to pack up their tools and leave, approached the foreman on the job and said, "What are you doing?" He said, I'm leaving because the homeowner will not allow us to do what we need to do here to restore power. He said, "You're kidding me." And he said, "I'll tell you what, you wait here just a minute. I'll address this." Thinking that the second homeowner was going to engage in a conversation with the former homeowner, they just waited in their trucks. Out comes the second homeowner with his chainsaw. He walks up to the tree, one particular tree that was in question, and he starts a chainsaw and he saws the tree down to the ground and lets it fall. Power company gets out, he walks over to the foreman and says, "I think you can go do your work now." That just illustrates, I think, one of the challenges that I believe we're already sensing and seeing within the county as it relates to buffer areas and even controlling conservation easements within certain subdivisions, especially your larger subdivisions. There will be challenges. Some of these will be social challenges. Dealing with the removal of trees within an area that are deemed by certain individuals within that subdivision as being a threat to their property, and that can be a very ambiguous concern, I realize, that often will involve the entity that holds the conservation easement to become involved in that and to mitigate that. That is already happening within the county at this time. This easement, if if added to on the current ordinance proposal, will place the county in a position where perhaps the HOA is unable to resolve that issue. It's not resolved at certain levels within maybe the conservation easement guidelines. And the next phone call comes to your house to deal with that, to mitigate that, given this particular addition of footage to the existing buffers. I'm not saying that we should not encourage tree planting or encourage natural areas to be developed within these subdivisions, but I think there are stakeholders that have ideas that would perhaps offer alternatives to simply adding to a buffer that would make it more accessible by the population that exists in that subdivision, and also that will allow the maintenance of those natural areas to be done in a more stewardship, a manner of stewardship that will be respected by all individuals. You know, when you think about the value of these buffers, I think it's important to understand that they do bring value, but they also bring a higher degree of responsibility to maintain them. And we have to maintain them, especially when you have individual residents that interact with that area. This is not a farm we're talking about. We're talking about a residential area. If that residential area happens to be next to a farming operation, there will be challenges, although it provides intrinsic value for the farmer. And I, as a farmer, I understand that and I appreciate that. But understand that in almost every case, I just think it's difficult to fully appreciate the effort, the equipment required to maintain enhanced buffers, whether they're on the edge of a subdivision or whether they're riparian in nature. So I would counsel, I would encourage and appeal to the council to think through this process and to perhaps, if you feel the desire to move forward with enhancement of buffers or open space within a subdivision, gather stakeholders that will have input to perhaps make this process more acceptable to all the citizens and to all the affected property owners. Thank you for your time.
Thank you.
Next on the list, Commander Dan.
Good morning. Good morning. I'm James LaBella, and I live in Lewis. Wanted to speak in favor of the buffers being increased at 40 feet as proposed by the ordinance. Center for the Inland Bays has recommended larger buffers. As was mentioned earlier, the two other Delaware counties have much larger buffers, anywhere from 50 to 100 feet. New Jersey, I was reading, links that has 300 feet. And it's been stated they work fine, despite the concerns that others have brought up. Other counties are doing very well with a larger buffer. And, you know, I think that makes a whole lot of sense, especially in, like, just recently, in the last 2 weeks, five letters have been in the Cape Gazette talking about the overdevelopment of Sussex County. The buffers, and the increase of the buffers will kind of help that, at least, like, to some degree. And I think the residents are looking council to slow down things. I mean, it's getting out of hand. I don't understand why buffers were not increased many years ago in Sussex County or Kent County and Newcastle County did this many times. Many years ago. Again, finally, I would ask that the council would vote in support of this ordinance and increase the buffers. Thank you.
Thank you. Next speaker.
Good morning, Mr. President, and ladies and gentlemen. Thank you for this opportunity to speak in support of this amendment.
Could you give us your name and address, please?
Thomas Haug, H-A-U-G. I live in Bethany Lakes. I'm the president of the board of directors there.
Thank you.
We agree with the earlier speakers of the amendment. We appreciate the opportunity to hear and to have this much support. We have stood in opposition to a proposed rezoning and development of a townhome community abutting our piece of ground in Bethany Lakes. of about 2.3 acres in which they want to put up initially 20, I think 16 now townhouses on a piece of property that has over 71 25-foot tall trees, including a solid buffer line of spruce trees that are well over 30 feet. They want to obviously maximize their use of the land, and we feel all those trees are going to have to be gone. And the plat they showed earlier obviously had those removed. We recently also had an event in our community where the developer, who has a mission to maximize land, make as many houses as he can and sell them, and we don't blame people for that, but within a 50-foot span of our entry road, planted 17 sycamore trees, which were between 12 and 18 inches from our entry road. Why? Because they were cheap. No one thought that they would become 40-foot trees, and 12 inches from our road undermine it, and we'd have to redo our road if nothing else. So as a HOA, we took the preventative measure to reduce or to eliminate those trees, dig out the roots, and plant crape myrtles, which have really no extensive root infrastructure. In closing, I don't want to reiterate what everyone else said. I agree with what the opposition is, or what the support is. I'd like to personally thank Mr. Burton for his stewardship and courage to bring this amendment to the floor. And and hope you will consider that buffers are, yes, mostly trees. And God seems to have had a great hand in the maturing of lots of trees, no matter where they are, other than deserts. So I don't see a great maintenance to feed trees or water trees. I think they have a great ability to do that themselves. I thank you very much.
Thank you. I would like to address council. There was some discussion during this person's comments concerning a matter that is pending review by the county council. The record is closed in that case, so for purposes of consideration, we're not to take those comments about that specific case. Next speaker, please.
Thank you. Hi, my name is Regina Willoughby. I live on Harmon's Hill Road in Millsboro, Delaware. I did not come prepared to speak today. I just have a couple comments that I feel like I need to make. All this talk is between buffers between developments. No mention is ever made of buffers between private homeowners that have been existing on that property, having the developments encroaching on all sides, and the buffer between us and what we have to look at. That's something that needs to be addressed also. I can see the 40 between two developments, 20 and 20, but there should be 40 between existing homeowners on private pieces of land, not involved in any development themselves. They should have more of a buffer than the developments. And the density issue that's not going to be decreased because of this increased buffer is ridiculous, because that just puts all those houses closer together on top of each other, which right now you can reach out and touch your neighbor in a lot of these developments. And how is that exception if they don't, if there's an exception for the not having the 40-foot buffer? What's the guideline for that? That's the problem that I'm finding in a lot of places. There's these things written in codes, but nobody can say, here's the definition, because it's just somebody else's opinion versus somebody else's. And then I just want to bring up the wildlife issues. Where are these animals, the fox, everything supposed to go? We're taking away all of their land. I've got fox outside, right out my back door. I've got deer outside my back door, which very shortly are going to be gone. And where are they going to go? The coyote was brought in here to cull the deer herds. They did flourish. I had two behind me. They're gone because they opened season on them. They got blamed for chickens disappearing, just like the fox do. But I guarantee you, I've seen the bald eagles drop down and take those chickens right out of my neighbor's yard. So I'm asking you to please vote for this increased buffer, not only for the protection of the county, but the protection of the private people that aren't involved in development. Thank you.
Thank you. Next speaker, please.
Good morning. Can everybody hear me? Merritt Burke. I'm here with the Sussex County Association of Realtors as the association executive. And I'm speaking on behalf of our president, Christopher Lind, and our public policy chairman, Bob McVeigh. First off, I want to thank Councilmember I.G. Burton for bringing this issue to the table. However, the Association of Realtors, as you have in your packet, opposes this amendment for two reasons. So the first reason, not to read the entire letter, is increasing the buffers, landscape buffers between subdivisions from 20 to 40 feet will only decrease land available for private property owners to use for residential developments in the future. Secondly, reducing the area available for home ownership. And home ownership is a key principle of the realtors, not only here in Sussex County, but nationally. There's 1.4 million members. We have 1,500 realtors in Sussex County right now that make a living buying and selling home, representing the public and protecting the public. So secondly, reducing the area available for home ownership would mean that there would be fewer properties for future purchases. With a national housing shortage, and I know someone spoke earlier about that, that is a true statement not only here in Sussex County, but across the country. There is a shortage right now. With a national housing shortage, per the National Association, reducing the area available for future homes would continue to cause a local shortage in residential housing units. And lastly, I'd like to say that the board of directors of the Sussex County Association of Realtors, 12 of them, along with the Public Policy Committee, another very active group, both oppose the ordinance. However, and per President Christopher Lind, we would like to be involved in a future discussion or a workshop if you were to delay or defer this vote, which I think you may, to have a conversation about this. I believe that the association believes in buffers, the 20-foot buffer currently, and would like to be involved. So thank you very much for your time, and have a good day.
Thank you. Next speaker, please.
Good afternoon, members of council. My name is Robert Tunnell III. I'm with Tunnel Companies in Long Neck, Delaware. And I'll keep my comments short. I'll just kind of give an overview, but I'll submit a more detailed letter in writing. So I come at looking at this buffer ordinance from a kind of a different perspective. Our family are developers. However, everything we've developed since the late 70s, we've always had a 50-foot buffer surrounding those developments. The majority of the Potness communities and Baywood all have 50-foot buffers. But so I'm looking at the ordinance from the maintenance side of things. We maintain over miles of buffers that are wooded, landscaped, and a mixture of the two. And there's a number of issues within the buffers. I agree, buffers are good. 20 feet, 40 feet, 50 feet, whatever you have, but the buffers are only as good as the maintenance and the upkeep and the ordinance allows for. So when I go through the ordinance, there's a lot of terms that are used in multiple places. Some places it says a forested and or landscape buffer. Some conditions apply only to forested buffers. Others apply to landscape buffers. It's very confusing, and I feel like all the conditions in the ordinance should apply to the same everything on the buffer. The definition of the buffer seems very restrictive. It doesn't account for either stormwater runoff from the buffer or allowing that buffer. Now that DENREC has new stormwater regs, there are forested buffer strips that are allowed for stormwater management for filtering water. This doesn't even allow a catch basin or any kind of drainage in those buffers to collect stormwater. So that would then have to be outside of the buffer. I think that's an issue. And that may also make developers, if there's issues grading to get water out of the buffers, just clear cut the buffers and start over, which I don't think is something that's warranted or needed to do. Buffers should be allowed to be designed by more than just certified forest and landscape planners. Certified arborists, professional landscape designers, there's other accreditations that are trained to design these types of buffers. And then there's a lot of very stringent conditions. Why is it a specific 70-30 mix of deciduous and evergreen trees? You know, there's soil conditions and water conditions, et cetera, light conditions that would require potentially a different mix, and there should be more flexibility allowed in the design of these buffers have a wider variety of trees or a different mix if need be, based on the professional's opinion. A lot of the buffers that we planted, instead of using the larger caliper trees like the ordinance outlines, we would plant much smaller caliper trees, but way more of them, so that there's a kind of a mortality rate that's acceptable through that, and then the stronger trees would take over. And the way this ordinance is written, it's almost like it's looking at a buffer as a static thing, like a street or a sidewalk or a sewer pipe that's always going to be the same. And it's not. A buffer is going to change over time. Certain species are going to take over. And it seems a little ridiculous to me that when a plan is certified and approved, that if a tree dies, the exact same tree has to be put back in that exact same spot. That tree died for a reason. Maybe that species of tree got too much water or not enough sun. Well, why are you putting the same tree back in the same exact spot? I mean, a buffer is a dynamic ecosystem, and it should change over time if maintained properly. And it also talks in this ordinance about you're going to maintain the buffer to the best management practices of the forestry industry. I mean, the forestry industry is commercial logging. I mean, you're looking at selective thinning and burning underbrush and eventually logging these trees. I mean, that's the best management practices of the forestry industry. I think there's other professional landscape association and things like that that have, or ISA, the Certified Arborist Code, that would be better for this buffer ordinance. So there's a lot more detail in my letter of looking through the exact conditions and some of the issues I have with them, but I really think if we are looking at expanding the buffer, we ought to do it the right way and go through and fix all these issues so that you have a working buffer that over time will maintain property values and look good, not just be a very big maintenance nightmare where a homeowner association has to plant the same tree over and over again in the same spot and watch it die year after year. I thank you for the time and the ability to comment on the
ordinance. Mr. Chairman, I want to ask you a question, if I may, Mr. President. You mentioned all of your communities have a 50-foot buffer.
Any community that was built after the late 70s, there's some that were built earlier than that that do not have buffers. But yes.
And that was something that you as a developer had chosen?
Depends. It was with Baywood, but with Potvin's communities, we've always had it in manufactured housing communities. There's always been a 50-foot buffer requirement since then. So, yes, some of those are mandated, but, after we got into it, I mean, with Baywood, we expanded upon that, and that the 50-foot was more than what was required through that. I think it was a GRRPC at the time.
So you're not against a 40 or 50-foot buffer per se?
Per se, if
it's just...
Other than just changing I think you really need to dig into the code details, and if you could change this... The details of the buffer ordinance to make it manageable for homeowner associations and buffers to change over time, I would be in favor of it.
So it's tweaking it's tweaking what has been presented in in your mind.
Yep. Thank you.
Thank you. Next speaker, please.
Good morning, Mr. President, members of council. My name is Ring Lardner, and I'm here today on behalf of the Delaware Chapter of American Council of Engineering Companies, otherwise known as ACEC. As an organization, we are speaking in opposition to Ordinance 2018-10 to increase the width of the buffers and the plantings. Currently, there are two buffers required in the code. Chapter 99-16D requires a 20-foot forested buffer adjacent to agricultural lands, and the definition of forested buffer in Chapter 99-5 is for all boundaries of a major subdivision and thus the subject of today's hearing. Also in Chapter 115, there is a 30-foot forested buffer for all cluster subdivisions that have dwellings within 50 feet of a residential development. Each of those definitions, Chapter 115, had different plantings than what Chapter 99 has. So there's always been that consternation between, am I doing a cluster buffer, am I doing a wooded buffer? And I understand, in talking to Mr. Robinson during the P&Z public hearing, that Chapter 115 kind of goes null and void, but that still exists today that we in the development community have used as a 30-foot forested buffer or a 20-foot forested buffer, depending on the type of subdivision and application. Increasing the buffer width from 20 feet to 40 feet when you combine them together, because you're looking at a perimeter subdivision, would now equate to 80% of your 100-foot depth residential lot. So you've increased from 40 foot to 80 foot, so almost the equivalent of 1 foot depth of residential lot. Based on experiences from our member firms, additional land is further required to convey or treat stormwater management that on average could be an additional 10 to 20 feet in width. And as Mr. Tunnel mentioned, we now have forested buffers per code we're allowed to do depending on the topography of your property. We sometimes have to create that drainage swale so we can drain water onto adjacent properties. So further land is required to create stormwater management. So therefore, the combination of the width of the proposed buffers and required stormwater equals to the depth of 100-foot to 120-foot deep lot. While the wider buffer does count towards open space, and in theory does not affect density, it does have a physical effect on potential development of the land. This body created a road and drainage working group in 2016 to holistically look at road design and lot drainage. Member firms of our organization, and I was one of those, participated in those meetings to help create regulations that allow design flexibility while meeting the needs of the county. The proposed widening of the buffers does not provide flexibility, which will inhibit creativity of land planners and developers. As we all know, every project is unique in its location, characteristics, and environmental features. The current ordinance does permit the use of existing trees to be used as a 20-foot forested buffer. Our office in particular has obtained approval on several subdivisions using the existing trees to meet the forested buffer requirement. The 20-foot forested buffer in today's code requires 15 trees for every 100 feet of width. When you take 100 times 20 is 2,000 square feet, which equates to one tree for every 133 square feet plus or minus. The proposed revision of 25 trees for every 100 feet times 44,000 square feet would equate to one tree for every 160 square feet. I'm not stating that the number of trees are not enough. What I'm pointing out is that the increase in the buffer width and the number of trees is less opaque than the current ordinance. So what I'm saying is the 20-foot buffer is more opaque than what's being proposed in today's ordinance. Our member firms have presented numerous applications in front of the Planning Commission, and I don't recall a discussion that the forested buffer was insufficient. In closing, a standard 3/4-acre lot subdivision is different than a cluster subdivision, and a subdivision in and around existing residential areas is different than agricultural fields. The buffer increase of 40 feet will have a negative impact, and we respectfully ask that County Council create a working group of landowners, farmers, developers, land planners, engineers, and citizens to create an ordinance that allows flexibility but achieve the author's intent. A working group was created successfully before and believe that it could be done again. We thank you for your time and can answer any questions you may have.
Okay, thank you. Next speaker.
Good morning. Bobby Horsley. I'm representing the Horsley family from Laurel, Delaware. Thank you for letting me have this time to speak. We've heard a lot of people in favor of this ordinance this morning, and I just want to tell you that, and I think that we got a letter on record that I give to Janelle for the planning and zoning hearing. Our family is adamantly against this ordinance. This is, I stood in front of you guys before, you know, we are big private property rights, not against the environment, not against the 20-foot buffer. You know, one of the communities I heard mentioned a while ago, we built in 2001, Painter's Mill. It's a gorgeous community. Every now and then, I ride my kids through there and tell them, we built that. You know, we were the excavation contractor. Trees were planted according to the permitted design, and everything turned out gorgeous. I don't think anybody complains over that community, but it was a 20-foot buffer. So, strongly against this ordinance. You know, IG, I've asked you before, why? What's the reason? Most time when new ordinances are proposed, there's a reason. Is it just we're trying to improve the environment? Has there been complaints? But, you know, the 20-foot buffer is more than adequate if it's planted properly and maintained properly. I think you've heard testimony that wider buffers will impose other problems on communities. So, you know, there's this ordinance and one coming up on the density calculations. But all these ordinances are impacting our property rights. These are all impacting our families' values. You know, I think you got a letter of opposition where the additional buffer is going to add almost $2,000 a lot in planning costs to developers. That cost doesn't come out, it doesn't get added onto the house cost. It comes out of the landowner at time of sale. Because as I've stated before, there's the end price of the sale of the house is what's dictating the market. So when builders and developers start to go out and try to buy a piece of ground, they start taking all the cost away, and the poor landowner, the poor farmer, is the one that's paying. It's not the homeowners buying in here, it's the farmer. So strongly impacts our family's livelihood. These additional costs will impact your affordable housing to a point, I think that the affordable housing is always, anytime you add costs, you're impacting your affordable housing side of things. I'm going to skip some of my comments. I apologize. I had to make some notes because I'm getting a little old, forgetful these days. So all these things that's being proposed right now are, as I said, are impacting our livelihoods, our retirements for our kids, my grandkids. You know, as farmers, we work 7 days a week to protect what we work, what we buy, and what we try to give to our kids and our grandkids, so they can make it as a farm family or whatever they decide to do as they grow up. But we work 7 days a week to protect. This impact, we shouldn't have to be standing here and fighting for our land rights, not in Sussex County, Delaware. And I can tell you, in closing, I have 2 points I want to make. The timing of this is a little questionable to us landowners and farmers. We're in the fall season. It's harvest time. You know, we can't fill the room with farmers because everybody's out there trying to get their crops out of the field. My future son-in-law is trying to pick watermelons before the hurricane hits, before they lose everything they got. My son and my nephew are picking corn because they're trying to get corn out of the fields before a hurricane hits. You know, farmers are 7-day-a-week people, and we're right now, it's our harvest time. So I strongly ask you, if you want to make an ordinance that's going to impact our land and our land values, do it during the winter months when the farming community has time to come up here and you let their voices be heard, when we can fill this room. Because we can't. We would be able to fill this room with farmers and landowners when they got time. You know, it's not fair right now because they're out there trying to make a living. And the last thing I want to leave you with is I've moved an eighth of a mile my whole life, moved across the field from where Mom and Dad raised me. And I never thought as a Sussex Countyan, I'm 50 years old, never thought as a Sussex Countyan I'd have to stand in front of you guys of a county government in Sussex County and defend our property rights and defend our property values. So I strongly urge you to oppose this, to decline this ordinance. And if you want to look and talk, put together a working group, but do it during the winter time when the farmers and the landowners have time to be here and defend their values. Thank you.
Mr. Hersey, if I may, Mr. President, because I've heard you say before, the previous gentleman made a comment about that ordinance that we had 2 years ago regarding the drainage.
Yes.
And that ordinance, I've heard you say, and I've heard some others say, that was perhaps the best ordinance that this county has ever put together because of the process. Yep. Meaning that there was an input from the various stakeholders, there was some time that was put together, some real thought,
yep.
And it was really put together for the benefit of the community, of our residents, because we've had issues with some developers and builders in the past, whereas properties just weren't being drained.
Yep.
And so it did have an impact on in many stakeholders, but we had everybody included for that conversation. So you are agreeing in that process, perhaps with the same consideration here.
Yeah, I sat on that committee almost 3 years before we finally got to the final adoption of the ordinance as it was proposed. I think it was last May we got it adopted. I sat on the Stormwater RAC Committee with the State of Delaware and Division of Environmental to rewrite the stormwater regulations to make it a better. You know, our family's been doing contracting in this county for 33 years, November 1st, and we're proud of it. We got 170 families that we provide livings to. And, you know, doing development work is our niche business. That's what we do. And we're very proud of that. And, yes, I do believe that process is a great process, is having all stakeholders to the table. And landowners and farmers are a big stakeholder.
Okay. All right. Thank you. Next speaker, please.
Hello, Hello, my name is Dave Carey. I live at 19 Bradford Lane in Lewis, and I am not opposed to the buffers. I think, though, that a working group, my suggestion or my opinion is a working group should be composed of people that have spoken today and all the interested parties to come up with an ordinance that is has more shape and more detail. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Next speaker, please. Next speaker.
Go ahead. While they're trying to figure it out, go ahead.
Yes.
It's all good. My name is Karen Connolly. I'm a resident of the Lingo development of 84 Hums, located at Old Landing Road in Rehoboth. It's called Wren Ridge. I grew up next to the closed end of the state park on the Baltimore County side of the Patapsco River, right across from Ellicott City, which right now their county council would love to only have the problem of tree borders, because years ago they put in so many houses that Main Street, Ellicott City, has now become the storm drain for Howard County, and they're getting ready to tear down 200-year-old historic buildings because of it. When you come into one of these developments and you don't realize, looking at a map, what it's really going to look like when your house is there and all 84 other houses, you realize how important the buffer of the trees is. The reason I'm here this week is because I had two neighbors behind us, and I'm also trying to figure out where our 20 feet is. I have 10 and a half feet to my fence, and there's another 10 and a half feet to the property line where I have seen drunks stagger more than the trees that are planted literally like this.
Wait, there's not drunks behind you.
No, there's no drunks. No, they're actually sad people. We're in an area where the development next to us is, it's called Arnell Creek, and the first lady that came out that was practically crying, she never dreamed they'd put three houses behind her one house, and she's actually asked me, because I've done landscaping, I've done, design of gardens and things like that, and I know a little bit about the woods and identifying trees since I was like 9 years old. She's like, can you come over and help me? Because every time these people come on the weekend, it's like they're in my home. Because even though there's an existing set of trees, it's so close. Our houses are like 20 feet from the property line, and then there's just some old Leyland cypresses and then a space to her house. Because I guess in the old days, they didn't have any buffer requirements. So I said, sure. And then I had one of her neighbors down the street wander down, and this woman was in tears as she told me about what she had gone through with our developer. As a matter of fact, when my husband and I were picking out the lot, I said, oh my gosh, look at how beautiful this is. It never occurred to me that there were going to be these poorly planted trees behind us in such a short, little, tiny space. This lady has these 25-foot crepe myrtles. They're in their 70s. They planted trees so that they would have minimal, they'd have the shade, because what most people don't realize about living in this area is that most of your costs are not your heating costs, it's your cooling costs in the summer, and trees provide for helping to cool things down. Anyway, this lady showed me, she says, look at this. And our builder put the trees of this less than 20-foot buffer literally right on the property line, and maple trees under crepe myrtles, trees that require full sun under existing full shade trees, trees that require shade like the American beeches I'm trying to keep alive, because I've sort of adopted the ones because I do want it to look nice when I look out my back. And I just have a mowed field behind me. There is no buffer. It's just a mowed field. So if I want privacy, it's going to be a long time waiting, because it's literally like three maple trees planted in a row. I don't know about you. Anybody can look on the tag that comes with a tree. Maple trees require full sun. They require acid soil. They don't like it too hot. And they grow 25 feet average width for a 10-year-old tree. What I have seen in our, I'm seeing trees that are stressed, and that because they're in such a tiny little area, it's not wide enough, that's going to call in for pests and fungus and things that we don't want drawn into the trees in our yards that we're trying to grow. Trees are so important. I think no one has mentioned the effect of having these soft buffers for the nor'easters and the hurricanes and the straight-line winds that get blown in with the 60-mile-an-hour sustained gusts of that last supposed to be windy, little low that we had off the coast. We need the buffers, if nothing else, to keep the siding on your house. So to me, what I heard, if all developers were like Mr. Tunnel, who spoke before, we wouldn't be sitting here. But these guys are trying to just check off the list of what few codes you have here, and I say few codes. You guys are nowhere near from where I come from, where they actually have to stipulate what kinds of trees. When I heard the one gentleman speak about the black gums and things like that, we want those trees. Those are native trees to this part of Delaware. You have to look at the whole state. What grows well in the northern part of Delaware, where the soil is more acidic, doesn't necessarily grow here. And my house is on a cornfield, so it's layers of sand, layers of concrete, concrete clay that they put down. It doesn't drain well. It's been almost a horticultural nightmare trying to figure out how to get things to grow properly. So I am all for the proposed expansion of the buffer. I think it's too small, to be honest, because we're just assuming that you're going to have two communities together, and it's going to be you want to go to 40 feet? I'm having trouble imagining 40 feet because I can't even see 20 feet where I live. I don't think that's too much to say for trees that we need that are going to get really, really large, much wider than this room. I have two American beech trees, which usually get 60 by 60. They're planted 4.5 feet apart. So what some of the other people suggested was that maybe the guidelines have to be more specific so that the right things get planted. And as far as adding maintenance and things like that, that goes to your economic growth. If people have jobs because they may have to go in once or twice a year to maintain things, don't we do that now with state highways and things like that? Things need to be maintained. But we also can't clear-cut and take away from the ancestral forests that are here. I have shagbark hickories. I have trees that are in the back buffer, which thankfully they didn't destroy, but they did clear-cut into. That have probably been here since the native Indians of this area have lived here. So, and if you're looking at protecting the area from storm runoff, we need more trees, especially with the number of houses you've proposed and watching the swales totally fill up with water. That's part of our problem, too. There's a swale, and then trees that are just planted in a stagger pattern. If you're going to name a stagger pattern, you have to say, you need to be a little more specific with that. But I'm just checking my notes. And I also think that you need to set the guidelines for the kinds of trees so that invasive species aren't planted. There's a Japanese black pine that's part of our tree planting. I've walked the entire perimeter of our community to look at these things, and it's sad to see all of these trees poorly planted And a lot of these landscape companies, there's no oversight. There's no one understands how to properly plant a tree. Every tree behind my house, I had to go out and literally either prop up or dig up because they were planted so they weren't going to survive. And I had no idea there was something that said that maybe the same tree had to be planted over again. We have to look at what works for southern Delaware and our soil and our conditions, and you can't make generalizations on what should be planted. So I am all for the proposal, but I also think there need to be a little more specific guidelines, because if you leave it to people who are only out to make money when it comes to this, the best interests of the environment and our foxes and everything else that lived here long before us should be looked at. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Next speaker, please.
Yvette Daly, Hummingbird Way North in Selbyville. Okay, first I want to thank Mr. Burton for designing a win-win ordinance. Looking back on Hurricane Harvey and now ahead to the possibility of Florence, I'm concerned about preserving our trees. I used to make fun of tree huggers, and then I moved down here and became one. I've become aware of how valuable our trees and our green space are for absorbing water, and how desperately we need them to offset the ever-increasing impervious surfaces. We can't stop the development, but we can do it in a smart way. Yes, there will be challenges and costs involved in maintaining buffers, but these are small in comparison to the cost of the damage that a lack of them can do. Obviously, Kent and Newcastle counties, as well as New Jersey and Maryland, have weighed these considerations and have done what is right, and I urge you to follow suit. Thank you.
Thank you. Next speaker, please.
Good morning. Two more minutes. We've still got morning. My name is James H. Baxter IV. I reside in 24933 Governor Stokely Road, Georgetown, Delaware. I'm a farmer. My family are farmers. I'm here not only representing myself and my family, but I'm here also representing Sussex County Farm Bureau. Sussex County Farm Bureau has more than 950 farmer members and 2,000 total members, and all of its membership is against added buffers.
All
of its membership is against these added buffers. Let me explain why. We feel it takes away from our valuable equity in our land. None of us want to sell our land, but we do business by using our land as equity to be able to operate from year to year. In regards to agriculture, I would like to reiterate what Mr. Horsey said, and the timing of this introduction is pretty poor. I should be on a combine. I should be trying to pick corn before this monster out there in the Atlantic comes and mows all my corn flat and I have to pick it up by hand. It's been said earlier today that these buffers would add to the rural look of their development. I encourage you to keep my livelihood viable, and by keeping my livelihood viable will make the rural look that they're after, that nobody will have to plant trees. Furthermore, it's also been said that we need to make Sussex County look more like Kent County or Newcastle County or New Jersey. I beg you, please, do not let Sussex County look like anything other than Sussex County.
Amen.
We love Sussex County. We love our way of life. Now, it also was said that 250,000 acres of undeveloped land is in Sussex County. You can take Baxter Farms Incorporated land off that list. Our land only